The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Mr. Bob Dio, producing and engineering the program on the other side of the broadcast studio glass. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition, late in July, July 24th, 2019. You're listening to 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk with worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Podcasts available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. We have a very active Facebook page. Check it out. Posted something rather interesting this morning on the Bill Buckmaster Facebook page. Going through some old material, ran into an article that I did in the Arizona Daily Wildcat 50 years ago, my photographs of the Judy Collins concert. Folks might find that kind of interesting, that 50 years ago. And where does the time fly? How does the time fly? Where does the time fly? Who knows? Anyway, we've got a lot to talk about, so let's get right into it with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo. Dr. Trujillo is the superintendent of the second largest school district in the state of Arizona, Tucson Unified School District. Dr. Trujillo, this is an extremely busy time for you. School starts, believe it or not, in July here in Tucson. Next week.
Well, just about. August 1st.
August 1st,
yes.
First of all, good to see you.
It is great to be back, Bill. Thank you for having me back.
A very important meeting last night with the governing board at Tucson Unified. What was the marquee item that that came out of that meeting? I heard it was something to do with restructuring the middle schools in the district. Could you explain that for us?
Yeah, so there were really two big items, and we'll take first the middle school item. And first, our governing board didn't approve a restructuring of any middle school model last night, but what they did do was they gave authorization for an initial analysis to see what the effectiveness could potentially be, what the capacity space-wise would be, what a cost would be, what impacts to the district's racial configuration as it relates to our unitary status plan, all wrapped up in what's called DSEG impact analysis. So they gave a green light for us to move forward with this analysis to see if whether or not moving and reconfiguring our elementary schools into K-6 instead of K-5 and going smaller at our standing middle schools instead of having them run 6th, 7th, or 8th grade, but having them be reconfigured into 7th and 8th grade learning centers, if you will, and then really taking a look at what a highly effective curricular model would be at 6th grade specifically. That would prepare sixth graders for the change into more of a high school, middle school style, departmentalized traveling class schedule. So we're excited about the model. I mean, I think that our board publicly at one point or another, they all kind of agree that something does need to be done with our middle schools. They're in need of pretty serious improvement with some of the outcomes that we've seen. It's, of course, the how, which is certainly up for discussion and on the table.
Well, it's an interesting point because back in the Middle Ages when I was in school in Wilmette, Illinois, we had elementary school, kindergarten through sixth grade. Then after you graduated from sixth grade, you went over to Wilmette Junior High School, and that was the seventh and eighth grade to prepare you for New Trier High School in Winnetka, Illinois. I don't understand why do we have this model here where you have sixth grade included in middle school? Is that something, what can you tell us about that? Historically, why is that the case?
Well, historically, you know, as I've talked to some of the old the veterans and the longtime watchers of TUSD, that the original move to TUSD used to be Tucson Unified used to be a K-6 district.
There you go.
And what happened was there was a move about 20 years ago or so to move for a more of a high school readiness model that the sixth graders needed to be. We needed to replicate a three-grade band model to kind of mimic a pre-high school experience.
Yeah.
And so that was the move at that time. There was seemed to be an uncomfort level with the behaviors of the older sixth-grade kids on elementary campuses.
Mm.
And so that drove the move.
Okay.
I know that I've been here now. I'm heading into my, this is going to be my third year as superintendent, fourth year in Tucson Unified.
Mm-hmm.
The outcomes academically, behaviorally, attendance-wise, staffing-wise, are all seriously concerning with the current middle school model.
Yeah.
And I know that we have very hardworking staff members. We have great teachers. We have great leaders. I do believe in the notion that a great leader can make a campus, but a great leader can also be working in a broken structure that's not set for their success. I can be an amazing homeowner. Okay. I can be a wonderful homeowner.
Sure.
But if you put me in a home with no roof and no door and there's leaks and there's structural problems, I can be master of that domain and I can do things very, very well, but I'm always going to be limited.
Yeah.
If I don't have the proper tools and resources and structure. So I think we have a structural challenge with middle schools. I'm not downplaying the need for great leadership or great teachers, but I do think we have a responsibility to put them in a structure that's going to be more conducive and unleash their potential and their success.
Well, I think it's great that we're talking about this because this sounds like it needs to be addressed. Another issue, family life, sexual education. There's now a committee that will be looking at what will the new curriculum be for sex ed in schools. The current curriculum goes back many years, doesn't it?
It does. And so the governing board, they appointed committee members to... They each were able to appoint a committee member to serve on an advisory board / board appointed committee. And their job is to and it's been, they've been doing this now for 3 years. It's actually been the culmination of a 3 or 4 year process. Their job is to recommend revisions and updates to the existing curriculum. They finished that. So last night's action, the board did not take any action to approve any curricular standards or any instructional materials or any textbooks. What the board did last night was they approved a 13-day review period for the curricular standards that have been recommended. And we're actually going to pre-identify any recommended handouts or instructional materials that might be recommended. And we're just going to go ahead and get that review process started.
Mm-hmm.
Because any instructional material, any book, any handout, anything that's going to be given to a student, that is subjected to a public review process. And we want to make sure that that gets started. So on the 13th, we're going to be revisiting the item again.
Matt is with us. Matt called the Buckmaster Show on our live line, and that number, of course, it's area code 520-790-2040. Matt, how are you?
Very good. This is a tough subject, Superintendent. I don't think anybody should have been surprised that this one is going to draw a lot of attention to you guys and how you're going to change the curriculum. In the STAR, they say the changes include medically and scientifically accurate information, healthy, familiar, and peer relationships, self-empowerment, interpersonal behaviors, and positive self-esteem and body image. Charlotte Patterson, director of the community services, said in a presentation. What the hell does it mean to the parents when you say that?
What does it mean to the parents, Dr. Trujillo?
Well, I think what it's going to mean primarily is a focus on healthy relationships and great decision making when it comes to decisions in this area. And I don't think that there's any better way to answer this question than to just get the public review process started. So gentlemen like this caller and everybody else, they can just get on the website and read grade level by grade level the specific material and set of performance objectives and standards that their students would be subjected to if parents opted in. I think that's another important point to make, that this is all voluntary anyway. So a parent has a right to see, number one, the instructional materials, the books, and anything that's going to be used in the class. A parent has a right to see the actual standards and the performance objectives, and then make a choice. I want my child in this class. I don't want my child in this class. And I think parents have every right to review that and show up on voting day if they have feelings strong enough and they want to address our governing board. That's our local democracy in action, and it's one I fully support.
790-2040, if you'd like to join in the conversation with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo. We're going to take our break right now because I've got so much more on the agenda. We'll take the break now, come back with Dr. Trujillo. We'll be talking about have they solved the bus driver shortage? What about teacher salaries? What about enrollment? Those are just three of the issues that we'll bring up with Gabriel Trujillo. But right now, Dr. Trujillo, I know when it comes to a cup of coffee, you just can't beat your favorite here in town. Where is that, Dr. Trujillo?
That's at Mona's Danish Bakery.
It is Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Dr. Trujillo loves their coffee, and probably when he's up there, he decides to have something out of the bakery case. I'm just guessing. Mona's located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner and chief baker Steve has made a large financial investment in bringing the Mona's into a full breakfast mode. They've got the grill. It's up and running. Been doing this now for a couple of months. Open at 6:30. Stop by, have breakfast. The blueberry or the chocolate chip pancakes are fantastic. All the waffles are delicious. I love the way they're doing the eggs and the hash browns. You can go with the eggs, the hash browns, then go over to the bakery case. How about pulling out a Danish there out of the case or one of those wonderful almond croissants? I could go on and on about Mona's Danish Bakery. MonasDanishBakery.com is their website. There's a link at BuckmasterShow.com. So much more with Dr. Trujillo after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news talk. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo is the superintendent of Tucson Unified, the second largest school district in the state of Arizona. We have a couple of calls waiting, but let's quickly, before we go to the live line, there was a newspaper article a couple of weeks ago. There was a shortage, or at the time anyway, of bus drivers. Will you have all the bus drivers that you need when school starts August 1st?
We're projecting to have to be fully staffed, and what's really helped us out with that is recently our governing board approved the usage of a third-party temp agency that specializes in being able to provide us retired bus drivers. So I thought
they specialize in placing retired bus drivers
that want to come back. So I mean just such a winning.
That's a win-win for everybody.
That's
the
a winning
drivers get to
method.
Come back. The
Absolutely.
Retired drivers and that they can get engaged again and make a little money. All right, Chris is first. Go ahead, Chris. You're with Dr. Trujillo.
Hi. How are you today, Dr. Trujillo?
I'm doing very well, Chris. Thank you.
I did actually get to attend a couple of the FLC meetings and the last governing board meeting. One of the recommendations that I made to one of the members of the FLC committee to alleviate a lot of the problems and a lot of the misinformation that seems to be going around, even in the media, would be to release the work product almost immediately now that it's been presented to the school board or the governing board. So I was wondering what your thoughts or position is on that.
And that's family life curriculum. That's what FLC stands for. Go ahead, Dr. Trujillo.
Oh, absolutely. Chris is right on, and the work product's coming within 48 hours, actually. We're going to get everything out there, make sure that the community has every opportunity to get in online and see what the curricular standards are, what the learning objectives are. And then, of course, as we stated last night, anything outside of a set of objectives and skills that are listed out, anything that we're given to students, whether it's a handout or it's an instructional material, we have to trigger a 60-day review process on that. So that'll get an even longer review process by the public. But Chris has a good point. It's got to get out there, and it's got to get out there soon now that we have a fully recommended product by the committee.
Chuck has a question as well about sex education. Hello, Chuck.
Hello, thank you for putting me on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Dr. Trujillo, it's my understanding that this new curriculum for sex education was heavily influenced by the LGBTQ community. I have a difficult time understanding how this community that only represents maybe 2% of the entire population of the United States can have this much influence over a new curriculum such as this.
All right. Dr. Trujillo?
I want to thank Chuck for the call. I can say that the LGBTQ community has not had an overarching influence on this process. I think that our governing board did a pretty good job of trying to make sure that there are diverse voices in the room. I think through the upcoming public hearings that'll be conducted in the online review period, I think we're going to be expanding and going above and beyond our efforts at transparency. As a superintendent for TUSD, I work for both sides of the issue, right? My job is to make sure that all voices are heard, and I work for all kids. And even though my LGBT kid community here in TUSD may not be higher than 2 or 3%, they matter 100% to me. Just like my 10% African-American student population and my Native American student, they all matter to me. So within the world of TUSD, I want to make sure that all voices are heard and that everybody is respected and welcomed.
How about teachers as we open school here on August 1st? Our salaries, I know there was a bump, right? A bump up, good news for teachers.
Really, really good news. I think Tucson Unified has distinguished itself now as being the destination to make the most possible money as your first year as a teacher. And I think having a first teacher salary now over $40,000, we're really only eclipsed by Cat Foothills at this point. And,
wow,
that's a crucial.
That's good money.
That's good money. Mm-hmm. And that is the crucial point in a teacher's career. That mm-hmm. initial, are you going to sign on with us, I think is really good. And then I think what people need to know and what we've publicized on our website and at the governing board meeting, hey, we've done 20% over the last 4 years. When you look at the raises that and the compensation that our teachers have seen year by year from 15-16 through what our governing board approved heading into the 19-20 school year, you know, we've gone anywhere from 17% to 25%. You know, when you look at first year, seventh year, and 14th year on our schedule, which are crucial points in a teacher's career. So we are always looking for ways to make compensation more attractive. The teachers are at the heart of our system. And so we want to make sure that we're continuing to do all we can to move them forward.
How many vacancies will there be? I know we had to use some, we had some teacher vacancies at the start of last school year. I believe it was under 100.
Yeah, last year we opened up at 84.
Yeah.
We're trying to beat that number. Mm-hmm. I've got about a week and a half to beat that number. Yeah, we're at sitting at 88 now, so mm-hmm. I feel pretty good. If we mm-hmm. can start down at around 70 or into the 60s, I think that we will hit like the fifth year in a row that we have decreased that number. So we're aggressively trying to fill those spots now.
There are about four changes that you would have tried to implement to improve enrollment. Let's go over a couple of those. Enrollment's just under 43,000 students at Tucson Unified. I know you'd be very happy to see the hemorrhaging stop and maybe get even a little bit of a bump there. But what are some of those changes, bottom line?
Well, what we did is we did a brief presentation last night just to update the community on the actual steps and deliverables that we were able to produce from the enrollment task force report that came in the fall. We focused on really four big things. The first one is we staffed the buildings. And for the first time, schools were open throughout the summer with enrollment personnel that were able to receive parents. And we have been able to foster over 9,000 registrations because of this effort over the summer. So that's a very positive sign. The second thing that we did is we radically restructured the way that we do open enrollment. One of the recommendations from the enrollment committee was that it was too hard to enroll at TUSD.
Mm-hmm.
You're already losing enrollment.
Yeah.
And your process is cumbersome and you're mm-hmm. making it harder mm-hmm. for an employee. So we just really tore that system down
it.
And rebuilt a new one. Mm-hmm. And so now anybody can enroll anywhere at any school. They don't have to come down to the central office and fill out a bunch of paperwork. The Fruchtendler parent in the East that wants to attend Mission View in the West can simply show up to Mission View. The office is open. They can enroll in the school directly.
Wow.
So we really streamlined enrollment mm-hmm. to make life easier for parents and really only keeping placement. Mm-hmm. The only time you come to district is if you're getting into one of our magnet schools or UHS or mm-hmm. one of our specialized schools.
Mm-hmm.
So taking that number down to only 14 schools, I think, is big
mm-hmm.
and really leaving the other 80 schools live where mm-hmm. anybody can go anywhere. Mm-hmm. That was a big one for us. So these are really big recommendations that I think are big. We formed an enrollment placement committee, which was another recommendation from the task force, that the district leadership was sort of operating in these silos when it came to enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
And now having everybody come together every single week to look at trends and to do trend analyses and see where more help is needed. And Santa Rita, we see some very good signs out at Santa Rita. It's very early. Santa Rita's up almost 50 students. So it looks like the brand new mm-hmm. CTE Dental Academy and the brand new Diesel Repair Academy are starting to catch fire
good,
and take wind
good.
Out there. So.
Good. There's certainly careers in both the dental field after having some serious dental work done last Thursday. I know that is a field that is always looking for good people, believe me. And the diesel mechanics, my goodness, that's another area. All right, Dr. Trujillo, good luck with the new school year.
Thank you very much, Bill. It's always great to be back.
Before we take the break right now, Dr. Trujillo, I want to tell our listeners, and you know how proud I am of our partners here on the show.
Absolutely.
And one of those great partners, they're one of our legacy partners, pretty much been since day one back in 2011, It's Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's a great getaway, only about a three-hour drive. So much to do over in that historic part of the Southwest. They have some of the most beautiful Victorian buildings in downtown Silver City and in the neighborhood. So it's a great opportunity for folks to just kind of hang out in a lovely historic environment. SouthwestNewMexico.org, the complete listing of many great places to stay and several dozen recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Coming up now on the bottom of the hour, our newest contributor to the Buckmaster Show, JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice, will be joining us. We have some breaking news about the Boeing 737 MAX jet. This is just breaking news that's happened within the last half hour. We'll share that with you, and Jeff Lattice will have some comments on that. Let's take the break. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock-full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice. Trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. Breaking news. Boeing reports its worst ever financial losses as the 737 MAX crisis continues. Get this. The company lost $3.38 billion for the quarter on $15.7 billion revenue, sending its stock down by about 3% at last look. Of course, the software problems that played a role in those two deadly plane crashes that claimed over 300 lives involving Boeing's new 737 MAX commercial jetliners resulted in the grounding of the MAX back in March. The company is now saying they may have to temporarily shut down the 737 MAX production. Today, we are honored to welcome a new contributor to the Buckmaster Show team. He's Captain Jeff Lattice. Jeff will be our contributor on aviation. We'll be calling on him often. We couldn't ask for a more knowledgeable professional in the aviation industry. He's a highly decorated retired combat fighter pilot. Jeff is a captain at JetBlue Airways in the Airbus A320, the Airbus A321. He has nearly 20,000 hours of accident-free flight experience. Jeff, thanks for being with us. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm doing real well. What does this latest news tell you about the continuing MAX crisis, Jeff Lattice?
Well, I think a lot of it obviously has to do with economics with the company. The problems that the MAX is having right now, all stems from a new computerized system that would inhibit the airplane from stalling out. That had some malfunctions due to either hardware. Then they tried to do a software patch to it. They found out that the processor couldn't process those patches. So now they're working on a patch to the patch, and there's a lot of skepticism right now about that patch. Because it's more of a computer hardware issue right now, being able to process all that information. They say, from what I've been reading, that they're pretty confident that they're going to be able to get it certified by the end of the year. But if this new software problem becomes more of a issue as they go through testing, it's going to delay their ability to fly the airplane. I think economically it's going to hurt them, and for them to just push it aside at that point and move on to the next plans, which might be what's known as the 797, that might be what they're going to be looking at.
Jeff Lattice, I want to ask you about the whole public image here. How in the world do you reintroduce once the plane is certified and everybody signs off on it? You could see this kind of, especially from American Airlines, that I believe has taken 24 of the 737 MAXs out of circulation. You could see them trying to say with a PR campaign to get the public back, this is a safe aircraft. I think I read something that the chief pilot American was saying that he's even going to be involved once they get these PR ads up and running. It's still a wild card, isn't it, Jeff, about how the public's going to react to this?
Yeah, I would say so. I have people when they come fly on my airplane, and they still ask me if this is a 737. and it's not even a Boeing product. The perception is going to be a very difficult thing for Boeing to overcome. To be honest with you, the pilots are a little bit angry about how this all went down, because this, what they call the MAX system, the MCAS, the pilots weren't even told about it initially until the first crash of the 737 MAX. Mm. And this is something that, most pilots will give you that, what do you mean? How come you didn't tell us about this? This is a system that actually affects the flight control systems, and it's something that the pilot should definitely be educated on.
Let me ask you, Jeff, is there a possibility that the MAX will never fly again in its current configuration? And could you take out the software that was causing the problem and basically make the MAX into kind of reverse engineering, make it take it back to the level of a regular Boeing 737? You hear what I'm driving at?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. And it's because of the engines. It's really the engines that are causing this problem, because most airlines of this size, the engines are mounted on the wings below the center of mass. And when they produce thrust, it basically torques the nose up. And the MAX system, these new engines on the 737 had so much more thrust compared to previous 737s that it would actually, from my understanding, overpower the autopilot. And the MAG system was there to basically push the nose back down before the airplane stalled. It's kind of goofy how it works. If I had more time, like, I could explain it a little bit better. But it works in a series of, I think it was 40 seconds on, that it's trimming the nose down. And then it turns off for like 5 seconds, take a sample to see if the angle of attack is still high. And then it comes back on again and pushes the nose further down for another 40 seconds. You can see that in some of the accident reports where the airplane looks like it's doing a bit of a roller coaster as it's going downhill. So back to your question, can you reverse engineer it? I don't think you can. I think that if this software patch doesn't work, it's going to require a new processor. And that's hardware, and hardware is very expensive to put on airplanes. Boeing has gone through this before, by the way, with the 737 when they were having some rudder issues back in the 80s. And they re-engineered the hydraulic actuator problem that was causing the rudder to malfunction. So they can do it, but it's expensive.
They wouldn't scrub the whole project entirely. You don't see that as a possibility.
That I'm not an expert on. Now, I will say, to me, it would seem more sensible. What they would do is go back, start producing their not the MAX line, but what they call the new generation 737. That'd be the 7, 8, 900 series. Try to fill the orders that are outstanding right now, and in the meantime, start developing, which they already have, and really put in full speed the 797.
All right, let me.
Which will be a whole new airplane.
Jeff, American has had all sorts of issues this summer. It's no secret they're very upfront. Some of the publicity that this has been a terrible summer, not only with the grounding of the MAX, I think about 24 American MAX jets grounded. That's caused a problem. There have been all sorts of weather delays, bad summer weather at their hub at DFW. They've had all sorts of labor issues going on with the union. This MAX thing has really added to a problem at American, hasn't it?
It appears to be because they have canceled. As a matter of fact, they closed a few of their routes to free up airplanes to fly where the MAX would have been flying. Now, you know, I will also say Southwest has, I think, 35 MAX. Can't remember exactly, but they don't seem to be having the scheduling problems that American has been having, and maybe it's because of the extra issues that they're having, like you say, with some weather issues, things like that. Yeah, you know, I've seen them delayed, but, you know, everybody gets delayed. Even, you know, the company I work for, we have our delays too. And, you know, it's something that's inevitable in the airline world. But it seems that I've seen certain problems that look associated to the MAX for American. Now, they've also said that they had some issues with revenue, even though I think today they reported their quarter reportings. And they actually, I think, did fairly well. You know, considering the MAX issues, Southwest, same thing. They're able to overcome some of their routing problems that they're having.
JetBlue is planning to fly to Europe. Is that still a go, Jeff Lattis?
Yeah. It looks like right now the plan here is about 2 years from now. We'll start going to London from New York JFK and Boston Logan. We still have some work to do at the company to make that happen, a thing called ETOPS, which is a certification you need to fly a certain distance out over the water. We fly over the water going down the Caribbean, pretty far out, but to do transatlantic and trans-Pacific type flights, you need to get the ETOPS rating. And that's a fairly lengthy process to get if you do it organically. If you don't do it organically, end up what most companies will do, they'll end up buying a company that has an ETOPS. Southwest did that with AirTran. AirTran had an ETOPS, and that allowed them to fly to Hawaii, for instance.
All right. Jeff, we're going to let you go. Thank you for joining our team. We very much appreciate it. We'll look forward to hearing from you talking about aviation, something you know very intimately. Thanks, Jeff. Always a pleasure.
Well, thank you for making me a contributing member. So I appreciate it. It's an honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jeff Lattice, the Buckmaster Show contributor on aviation, our newest team member. Another one of our team members. We have over two dozen contributors on a regular basis. He's our historian. He's Ken Scoville. We'll be talking about... Well, there are some people that refuse to think of Tucson or live in Tucson that think, hey, I live in a desert. Well, we'll talk to Ken about some of the history about that thinking as he will share some of his thoughts after we take the break on Buckmaster.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted news talk in Tucson. Ken Scoville, historian, is our Buckmaster contributor on Tucson and Southern Arizona history. Ken joins us now in studio. Ken, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, and it's a little cooler than it. We had one day that was 110, but
yeah,
it's a little nicer now.
Yeah, I wish we'd get a little more rain this summer. It is kind of an outlier as far as monsoon. It's a very different
fizzle
kind of,
might be the
yeah,
word so
fizzle
far.
Fizzle is the word. Were you able to find a parking place under a tree?
Yes, I was pleasantly surprised.
Wow.
When I drove up for the show today, I got under a tree. And I think that's sort of a nice segue to think
it
about.
Is.
We start wondering about our environment a little bit more in the summer when we're looking. Why aren't there more trees in the parking lot? I want to run into the store. I can't find any shade.
Well, it's almost a requirement. The first thing you do look for is shade when you're out shopping. Why aren't there more trees in Tucson, Ken?
Well, I guess that's what historians are supposed to be. We take a little bit bigger look at things.
Yeah.
In fact, when I do tours or talks a lot, I always like to pose a question in the present. So why aren't there more trees is a good place to start. But even a bigger question is, why is Tucson the city it is today? Mm-hmm. And I essentially, and if we really look and think about it, and the trees are a sign of this, that we deny we live in a desert. Mm-hmm. We have done a much better job than Phoenix, which is my home where I grew up, or Las Vegas. But we still have too many elements, and trees are a key part of it. Realizing, and like I like to talk about, prior to the railroad, we'll bring up the railroad again, mm-hmm. we had to be a sustainable community just because of the physical limitations, and we had no opportunity to deny the situation. Once the railroad comes in, everybody starts thinking, I want to have a house that looks like where I was from.
Uh-huh.
And I went over
with a lawn.
With a lawn and imported trees, mulberries, pollen things, and mm-hmm. all the other kinds of things. So that started this idea about having something from somewhere else. Like I just got through taking a big trip. I went to look for historic places in Indiana, Ohio, and Illinois. Mm-hmm. I didn't see one Saguaro. The whole trip.
No.
So,
well, you were back in my home state of Illinois. I didn't realize you were on it.
I would never have been to Springfield. I want to see Lincoln's home as well.
Oh, yeah. It's very interesting.
Oh, it's just wonderful. And I love the context and how they reconstructed.
Sure.
Just as a sidebar, when I was talking with the Rangers at Lincoln's home, he said, and when we took this over in the early 1970s, there was a Piggly Wiggly down the street. And they've recreated a little bit of his neighborhood and restored some
of places. The original Lincoln neighborhood.
Yeah, so that you get the context in that, and that's another story. But we're at, like most desert places, everybody's loved the winter weather, but want to make it look like they're home from somewhere else. And that started a culture that really would start denying that we live in a desert.
That did change a little bit in the 90s here, right? Where folks started to go, what is it called, xeriscape?
Xeriscape, but we had the most water-thirsty plants close to you,
right.
And then expand out. But if you go back to a next historical thing, you can start seeing that we're having little moments we're starting to accept our environment. Believe it or not, it wasn't until 1924 that the city council voted for water meters.
Really?
Before then, you could use all the water you wanted. And now this was sort of a boom, but I think there was enough people going, we've got to start doing. So we finally got water meters. I think the next big pivotal event would be the arrival of the real emphasis on designing Tucson around cars.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did with the strip commercial development, we would have a very narrow corridor on all the streets for your commercial development,
right.
And then the neighborhoods back behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But all you have to do is drive down Speedway and say, there's no place to plant a tree.
Right.
There's just a little bit of parking, there's the building.
Mm-hmm.
So we started really dooming ourselves in certain corridors. It's always going to be hot, and you're never going to find shade.
Our friend Tim Stellar at the Star wrote about 2 million new trees for Tucson. Is that realistic?
Well, it's...
We've been trying to plant, I think, 10,000 on an annual basis.
Right, and Mayor Rothschild has really been the point person to emphasize this and support this.
Mm-hmm.
But 10,000 trees a year, and this is where it gets sobering, this isn't even enough to replicate the amount of tree deaths.
Right.
So we're still getting behind.
We're still on the negative side, right?
Yes. Our overall canopy for the metropolitan area of Tucson is about 8%. Mm-hmm. And they really think it should be like 20% or 25%. Mm-hmm. And they're sort of hoping, referencing the article, that maybe we can get this to 15%. But we're going to have to plant several hundred thousand trees a year.
Do trees do generally the right tree planted will do well, though?
Yes. Again, like everything.
And again, right tree being?
A Palo Verde, acacias, mm-hmm. things that are more native or more imported trees that are a drought-resistant species. Mm-hmm. I'm not a tree person, but those things would be.
But we did have this issue with, and we had Dr. Mark Sneller here on the show earlier this week. As you recall, Ken, he was the Pima County pollen and mold consultant for years for Pima County, and he was talking about how there was an ordinance to outlaw, in effect,
olive trees.
Yes.
Olive trees.
The olive trees.
Yes.
Yeah. And so some of these, they're still around, the olive trees, but I guess...
They got grandfathered in.
They got grandfathered in.
We need
the
shade, but we still got the pollen issue.
Yeah. So you're saying that things started to change. Are we better off than... Well, you mentioned Phoenix, and certainly people still do the irrigation up there with their lawns. And look at Las Vegas and the water they're using.
Right, and I think the perfect statement is the Bellagio Lake, 5-acre lake on Las Vegas Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the key thing that we're still trying to catch up as the city grows, we still scrape the lot, and it's up to the owner to put some trees in. And a lot of times we get maybe one tree or a piece of cactus. We've just had an idea of scraping and building and not really legislating that you've got to have trees on your development. And they're starting to do this more because it sells the houses better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we're still, as a culture here in Tucson, we are not doing enough with trees.
One thing we didn't talk about is the advent of air conditioning. That was the big game changer. You've always mentioned the railroad, but air conditioning too.
Right. Well, yeah. That brought a lot more people in.
Yes.
We would have had a little bit more limited population if we hadn't had a way to mechanically cool the air.
Mm-hmm.
You just wouldn't have had, or what even like the Arizona Inn, I don't think it was until almost 1950, they'd close for the summer.
Really?
Yes. It used to be just a totally seasonal operation.
Huh.
Till you got air conditioning, you couldn't have a hotel.
No,
people wouldn't show up.
No, and then automobile air conditioning really kind of caught on in the 60s.
Right, and then you can remember the units that you'd put in the window, and if you drove the air, it'd be a little evaporative cooling.
Right.
Evaporative cooling. But hopefully, and I think global warming is going to push us quicker, and like I always like to say, Tucson 100 years from now will be a totally different city than what we see today. It has to be. To survive.
As a person who has been leading talks downtown, you do these walking tours. What's your take on water again in the Santa Cruz?
Oh, they've tried that so much. I think
there have been efforts before this?
Right, and different momentums.
Okay.
I think some treated affluent strategy like with Sweetwater would be the ultimate answer for that. But I really think the answer is more trees.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to get more a tree growing on the site. But and one other little side from doing tours, first thing people ask when they're from somewhere else in the world, they say, where's the water? Because, you know, if you go to St. Louis or wherever, there's a water source or places all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I normally tell them, we used to have the water, but we've been pumping our groundwater for 100 plus 150 years.
I've seen these pictures. There was the water running in the Santa Cruz.
Right,
up
it was
until
never the Mississippi River, but
there was water,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. But it's actually more of a surface flow that they would divert for crops. It didn't get channelized till after the turn of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. The water issue, do you think will hold Tucson back as far as growth eventually?
Up to this point, it hasn't. I don't see any. I think there's a culture in the world that technology is always going to bail us out.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see in any standpoint right now that's going to it'll keep growing because people are attracted to the weather and the other amenities that make Tucson an interesting place. But we're going to have to want to live that we live in the desert.
There are still a few neighborhoods that you can see green lawns, Winter Haven being one.
Right, but they're changing a lot too. And the other little denial of the desert thing, when people finally started getting their water bills higher, they went from green lawns to green gravel. And there's a few places that I could still show and tell, but there's a green gravel front yard.
Any lectures you're giving in the future that
I'm
you would like to promote?
I'm going to be doing a talk for next month for Tohono O'Neill for Tucson's birthday that I'll probably be on next for.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, essentially the founding of Tucson and how did the old Pueblo become the old Pueblo.
Mm-hmm. And we will have you on right before Tucson's birthday. I've kind of lost track, but this is 200, and do you recall?
Oh.
I don't know. We're over 200 years.
Oh, it's 237.
Something like that.
Yeah,
since, and, of course, Tucson's a lot older.
I should say 237.
The area is a lot older than the 4, European.
4,000 years.
Yes, the European influence. That's what we kind of measure when we have Tucson's
or
birthday.
A celebration of living on the desert.
There you go. Ken Scoville, the Buckmaster Show historian, contributor. The bios for all of our great contributors at buckmastershow.com. That's going to do it for Buckmaster on 1030 The Voice. Around the Table with Jennifer English is coming up next on 1030. Our thanks to Bob Dio, my fine engineer producer on the other side of the glass. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening.